All right, I would like to call the April 13th, 2023 meeting of Laws, Rules, and Government Services Committee to order. Can I get a
first? I'll do it.
Motion for minutes, seconded by Gavaris. All in favor of approving the March 9th minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Oh, wait a minute. I wasn't present today. Well, I was from here. That was
the way. Sorry, you can still vote on it.
Okay.
All in favor is aye. None opposed. Do you need me to take attendance? All members are present, aside from Minority Leader Ronk. We also have Legislator Erna with us. Let's take, we're joined by our Elections Commissioners and Deputy Commissioner Fuentes. So let's take, if there's no objection, Resolutions 184 and 212 out of order, starting with Resolution 184. Can I get a motion to discuss?
I'll make that.
Seconded by Gavaris. Would any of you like to speak to this at all?
I'll chime in.
Sure. We can go over timelines if that helps. We have had open houses from vendors that we've been looking at for an upgrade of our voting system. We are on pace to make a decision in June to put in a purchase in July so that we can have systems in place for the November election and train all of our inspectors August, September, and a little bit of October before we start voting for early voting.
We've narrowed it down to two vendors. The two vendors that we have narrowed it down to gave us more refined estimates as to what it would cost, and initially what was perceived to be like a 1.4 over the past year has pretty much gone up to about 1.8, if not topping out at the 2 million range for some of the build-outs for these new equipment. It is essentially the same concept for voters. It doesn't change that. It's newer generation equipment. One of the vendors, both vendors have their pros and cons. One of them, I think, would actually probably outlast like 15 years if we truly took care of the equipment. So we would get similar longevity to what we have managed out of our current fleet, if not better. That would at least allow us to get the best bang for the buck and be the most efficient with our investment of these dollars. And otherwise, each of them have their individual pros and cons for the other vendors, but pretty straightforward on what kind of service we have to provide, and I think we're both confident that both the vendors were down to meet those needs.
Yeah, and these, obviously we still have a state budget that's kind of adopted, but there is monies that were presented by the Senate and the Assembly that would offset some of the costs for this improvement. This is not a situation that is unique to Ulster. A lot of boards are going through the same process as we are.
We're probably one of the early adopters on this schedule because everybody else seems to be okay with trying to implement new machines in a presidential election. I can tell you Ashley and I aren't. We don't want voters to come out and have that first impression being during a presidential election. And so we, in order to help us move this clock up, we also do have to look for that a little bit of insurance in what we're budgeting for this until the state actually allocates any funding that would essentially be able to save us from having to go into this full $2 million. I think we're both optimistic that once the state does eventually adopt the budget, we could be seeing anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000 come back to cover the cost of these machines.
Where did you get the number $2 million from?
The latest proposal that we had from one of the vendors was about 1.9. Jen, you want to speak to that?
We got the number, the $2 million, as kind of an estimate, taking the four vendor proposals. That the Dominion proposal, which we're actually not interested in, is actually significantly higher. That was what I got quoted back when we started this project in 21.
Even ES&S.
ES&S is like $2.7 million. By the time we get everything that goes with the systems. I think 1.8, 1.9 is what we're looking at. I would also, in addition to the funds that were mentioned in the forthcoming state budget, which we don't know about, we do have $307,000 on hand that can be utilized for to put towards the cost of these voting systems as well.
So
it's a reimbursable program, so we have to buy them first.
The $600,000 that the financial impact, what does that mean compared to the $2 million?
The $600,000 is just the
increase in the capital
budget. In the capital budget from 1.4 to 2. That's a more refined estimate from each of the vendors that we were able to get.
Should the financial impact say 1.9?
You already approved 1.4.
Okay. Thank you.
Anybody else? Legislator Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question in regards to, for the commissioners, if there's any cost, potential cost difference between, you know, what the current setup is with the number of polling places and the number of machines versus if we consolidate polling places or, you know, go away from ED-specific, you know, voting, would that potentially have any change on the cost?
It would have both a increased and a decreased cost based on how you
so
look at it.
Right now, it's not permitted under election law. There are bills that have been put forward to have centers model the new standard. However, we're still required to do election district-specific poll site assignments right now for election day.
Some of the trade-off would be if we decrease the number of poll sites, we would have to have those poll sites be more tech-savvy with the ability to do on-demand printing.
Yeah.
So while we might have less poll sites, each poll site's operating cost would go up. In theory, in order to get like a larger cost savings, you have to be able to do it across the whole county rather than just in a couple towns. The city of Kingston could be a great example in the near future should like legislation pass where we're allowed to do both centers rather than just have designated poll sites for each of the districts, which would allow anybody to go to any of the poll sites. But that, again, to do that would require a couple trade-offs, whether we're printing the ballot on demand for the voters at any of the locations, et cetera.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Legislator Gavaz.
So this should have been more weight to me, but total cost of ownership, are they on par with each other?
The two vendors that we are looking at are on par. The two that we've knocked out were at least $400,000 to $500,000 higher.
Meaning for ongoing costs, like is there, you know, a maintenance agreement
yes.
that are required? So
mm-hmm.
that that's
yes.
all been factored in.
Yes.
And that's included in the quotes that are there.
Difference, though, is we ran out of our Dominion service agreement and we chose not to renew anything with them. So for the past, I want to say, at least 8 years, we haven't been paying them any annual maintenance fees, whereas as we enter into any of these contracts, we'll be entering into at least a 4 to 5 year maintenance agreement, and then post that, we'll have the option of continuing on to use those maintenance agreements or do what we did with Dominion, which is do it all in-house ourselves and save that additional cost.
Anybody else? Seeing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None passes. Moving on to resolution number 212. Can I get a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
Do you guys have anything you want to add to this or any questions?
School districts?
Yeah.
Those are my babies. it's all going exactly as it always does. They are, they've been given their agreements to review for their superintendents to sign off on. We are providing services to them in the form of absentee labels so they can issue those ballots to those voters that request them. I don't expect any hiccups. We expect a successful school district election on May
17th. Sounds great. Any questions? Seeing none, I'll call the vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
None. Passes 4-0. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Enjoy the weather.
Me too.
Trust me, this committee runs a tight ship. We take pride amongst the legislation.
Unlike ways and means.
Yeah. We'll see you.
Take care.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
We can go back to our regularly scheduled programming, starting with Resolution 124. Our esteemed colleague, Minority Leader Ronk, is unable to join us this evening, but I'll call a motion for this discussion.
I would like to, on request of the Minority Leader, postpone this. Unless you guys want to talk about it, I don't care.
So motion, second. Motion to postpone. I'll second that. All in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. 4-0 to postpone. Glad to make Mr. Rock. Resolution number 125, adopting proposed local law number 2, a local law designating affordable housing as an Ulster County public person. Motion to discuss. So, can I get a second?
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Levine. Would you like to go first, Legislator Gavaris?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Please do.
Under definition, first question in there is utility. What is the rear of the utilities defined? Is that a state definition? Is it a local definition?
Okay. I'm sorry.
Section C is the definition. I'm sorry. Section 2, subsection C is the first sentence, really. 30% of gross income for housing costs, including utilities, for persons. What constitutes utility? Does internet? Does telephone? Does cable?
All of the above?
That's what I'm saying. I'm questioning it.
Section 2. Oh, sorry.
Section 2, yeah. Definitions,
section 2,
yeah.
Subsection 6.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's not defined.
And it may be defined somewhere. I just want to ensure that it is defined somewhere because it affects the calculation.
Well, my question would be, do you think, like, would it fall under the definition of public utilities more so than...
Well, I don't know. That's
because
it affects the total number. So if we're saying 30% of gross income is being spent on, to be defined as affordable housing, what is that 30% of? What's that total number?
Mm-hmm.
Does it include utilities? So, and then the other question, so if we don't know the answer, that's fine. The other one is related to, would this apply to somebody, let's say a single person who wants to buy a house? Would this apply in terms of a mortgage? Because the way I read it, I think it does.
Property taxes?
But that's what I'm saying. So part of that, and I did a quick thing, in Excel real quick to see what this would cost. If it includes mortgage, then you have to then assume also, because of housing costs, insurance, taxes, water and sewer, electric, heat, gas, and then the utility part, phone, cable, internet, whether that's included or not. If all those things are included, and I think I'm being a little conservative here on the number, but based on a $200,000 house, you're talking about a gross annual required salary of $117,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you fall below that, you're in this program.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever this program turns out to be, the high number, $117,000.
It is high. That's
what it is. Is there a cap on? You said $200,000 house. Are you using that for generic purposes?
I'm using it for generic purposes.
So it could be $400,000.
So I went on Zillow. I looked at for Ulster County. I looked at the average house pricing over the last 5 years, and it was $200,000 minus some of the high numbers. That I took the middle, the average of the middle, and it was around $200,000 was the average sale price. And then taking today's rates of interest, I took the middle number of 6%, and that's how I got to that number, figuring the mortgage. So, we started talking about before the meeting about what does this mean, but we don't know. So I know Jonathan was saying that this could be, money coming from the state for potential grants, but it could also mean that this legislature could approve us to start spending money to build housing to do essentially whatever related to housing. And that's the, this is very open-ended, and that's my concern, the open-endedness of it.
Mm-hmm. Legislator, huh?
So I haven't talked with the writer of this, legislator, you should tell, but as another sponsor, I would support it covering homeowners, personally, as one legislator, and I see Legislator Gavaris' concern about maybe the vagueness of the definition. I do see it says state or federal housing program, and the copy Councilor Gordon just gave me doesn't have the amendments that we made in the Housing Committee, which added very low and extremely low to where it says low or moderate income, which do have technical definitions, I believe, at least under state law, if not also federal.
So what are those amendments actually, functionally, what do they do?
They clarify that if there's a program that deems someone to be in a, quote, very low or, quote, extremely low income
eligible
level.
To be deemed, that's the amendment you're talking about?
Yes.
It was
a recommendation from the public in the public hearing, and the extremely low, I believe, is from zero income up to, I don't remember what the, it's based in terms of AMI, but whatever the percentages are, it's from zero to some number, and then very low is the next tier above that. I believe it's 0 to 30 and then 30 to 50, but I don't think that was going to go in the law. That was going to remain tied to whatever the state or federal definition was.
They have them.
Okay.
Yeah, so, that, so
that.
By that means, I see what, yeah. Deemed to be. So that,
yeah.
that wouldn't count towards someone if they met any state or federal. That's also like 117,000 wouldn't meet, would, you know, in terms of income by any state or federal housing program, 117 would never
qualify. I understand that. But then 117, so if a person, and I don't know what the standard is, the eligibility, but I'm assuming it's going to be well below, let's say, even 75,000, okay? So if you're in 75,000, you still have a difference of $42,000, which would then put you into you're more than well over 30% of your rent being your gross, part of your gross income.
Does council have any? I believe was Ragucci involved in this one.
Just to give you the example of what I was trying to say just now. So at $117,000 in gross expense for housing, a person earning $58,500, that would be 50% of their income. So they're not at 30, because if they don't meet the eligibility of the extremely low or very low, if that's what we're saying here, but now their housing costs are 50% of their salary. I mean, it's a lot.
No.
And they wouldn't be eligible for any programs that were offered.
What's the owner?
I definitely see the issue here, because we have someone who's of pretty modest income who's clearly not affording, and it's not clear that, I mean, just like what you said, I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, you would exempt them from, potentially exempt them. Again, this is very vague. That's the concern, and I don't know. There are no programs on the table right now, which is another problem. But just thinking of what sort of I've heard from side discussions, if there were some programs out there, a person earning $58,000 a year, based on if we're going on typical income requirements, would not be eligible, but they're not at 30, they're at 50% of their income for that they're spending on housing, but they're not eligible for, and I hate to use the word subsidies, but let's just call it subsidies, I don't know what other word to use right now. They wouldn't be eligible because they don't meet the low or extremely low income bracket.
Does anyone else have any thoughts?
Well, you know, we talked about it briefly before we got started here, and I see we're going down a path that I don't know where we're going with this. I don't see an end game. I don't, you know, this should be a policy that's a local law. Just defines a few things, but I don't see an end game. Are we getting into housing business? Are we subsidizing low-income people? I just don't see it. I heard a legislator say at Ways and Means the other day that food is part of housing. Is that going to be part of it at some point? I just don't, maybe we should look at some real problems. Why housing went up? Why people can't afford? Why are we including utilities? The controller had a report that electricity revenue sales tax went up 33%. People aren't using more electric. That means the cost of electric went up. That's why we're paying more sales tax. Maybe some of the policies that, you know, this body and other bodies are causing electric to go up. You know, we shouted up and down for Indian Point to be shut down. It got shut down. Did that have effect on it? We all put in resolutions not to open up Dan's camera. You know, did that cause electric to go up? You know, we can't have the Pilgrim Pipeline. Did that cause electric to go up? And go on and on and on. We all support eviction laws where, you know, makes it harder for landlords to, evict tenants that aren't paying or for whatever reason, COVID, whatever. Did that cause rents to go up? Housing go up. So we should be looking at real problems here and how we can fix this without dumping more money on it or potentially dumping more money on it. There's got to be a price tag to this down the road. The county's having some aggressive programs going on in the next couple of years. The EOS is $34 million in counting. You were in the committee the other day at Energy and Environment. We're going to have to bond for this landfill scheme. It's going to cost minimum $40 million. Nobody wants to talk about that. And then we're going to have housing department. Everything should be on the table here. It's got to be all linked together. Eventually, this money's going to run out. Gravy train's going to be over. And, cost to it, this has got to hurt. No, it shouldn't hurt.
Oh, it's okay. I was just texting Legislator Uchitel, who said he'd be happy to at least call if folks wanted to direct questions to him as the author of the bill.
I can ring him.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah, I'll tell him you're going to do that.
Tell him I'm going to ring him from
okay.
An odd number.
Okay.
Partly, I don't have a solution, so I'm bringing up questions and I'm not offering a solution, which
mm-hmm.
is not usually very helpful, but I acknowledge that. The other part to this is something I said in caucus and I said it before, is this is about
mm-hmm.
a affordable housing availability, this goes back to the townships. This is the zoning issue that I keep repeating over and over again, just my experience with developers doing affordable housing projects. I have some experience with both with two developers, and they are telling me the same thing over and over again. If they had places to build them, they would build them. There's no shortage of availability of doing the project.
Hi.
The location.
Okay.
Evening.
Thank you for joining us. Legislator Gavaris, do you want to go back?
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
There we go.
Can you hear us?
Hi there.
Yep. Thanks for joining us. Legislator Gavaris, do you want to go back to your initial questions?
Yes. I just said so it was a question on definitions under Section 2, Subsection C about affordable housing. It says including utilities. But utilities aren't defined, or at least they're not defined in this. Is there a place where you know utilities are defined?
Yeah, this whole section was actually inserted at the recommendation of Planning Director Doyle to align with the state housing definitions. So the whole language is pulled from the state, where everything is defined more fully.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking is because does things like internet, phone, cable, is that included in utilities?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I know that this entire section was under the advice of counsel, their counsel and our counsel, in order to align with the state the state definitions.
It looks like counsel.
If we were to define further, we would run the risk of being in conflict with the state definitions. So that was why they added those definitions in there, is my understanding.
Well, then a question to council then would be...
What section are they referring to? Is there a specific provision in New York State law that Doyle is referring to? It's not mentioned here.
Did you hear that, Jonathan? Or Abe? Sorry.
I did hear that, and I don't know the answer to that specifically, but I know that that Council Ricucci and the county attorney and Dennis Doyle all spoke about this, and this was the language that they arrived at.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, I just pulled up the state comptroller has a housing affordability study. They refer to ACS, which is American Community Survey, that the census does. And their definition, just for the sake of argument, of utilities is electricity and gas on a monthly basis, water, sewer, and other fuel yearly basis. That's it. No internet, no phone, no television.
Yeah, and that might be. I mean, that might be what we're aligning with. I mean, I don't know that their opinion from the comptroller, if an opinion from the comptroller, you know, holds the same weight as state law, but I think that's a good example of what could be the definitions that we're moving forward with. And I don't think that there's an issue. I mean, if I'm curious for anyone on the committee, would your opinion about this change of internet was or wasn't included?
The reason I brought it up to yourself is because it affects the calculation, which is the second part of my issue with this section, is it affects the calculation of the 30% number. So that's why I'm asking what's included and what's not.
No, I understand that, but I think I don't see that it would be a blocking issue, and I think it's, you know, you end up, no matter where you draw the line around eligibility, you're going to end up drawing it short of some people and including other people. There's always going to be more people that we would want to help with this, and so I don't necessarily feel that we would be, you know, putting the county in a bad position in either scenario. And it's not to say that we can't always do better than this. This is merely meant to say that we're the actions that this should enable are intended to help folks that are at that end of the affordability spectrum.
Second part.
Yeah.
So the second part is related to the amendments, I guess, that were made about who's eligible and who would not be. So if they're falling to, and these are, you said, state definitions of eligibility, that's where these came from?
Well, the housing, the affordability, the housing definitions were related to the state. I don't know exactly which section you're referring to.
Still the same section.
But that section was.
Yeah, still that section C, but there was an amendment made apparently recently at, I don't know if it was health or what committee.
Yeah, health.
Health. It says deemed to be or eligible to be deemed to be extremely low, very low. So
yes, it was meant to. That, in my opinion, that was a redundant amendment, because what we had said prior was low or moderate income. There are actually definitions for very low and extremely low, and my read on it initially was that by saying low, it's clear that you're capturing the bottom bracket, but others felt that we should explicitly name those below that are lower than low, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. So it's just more stating with more finer detail, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so then the affordable housing part, so if you're you have to meet these requirements. So just to give you some numbers, which I think of things sometimes at the weirdest of moments, and I thought about it today, and that's when I started doing the formulas. So if you were to, it looks like this would qualify for somebody if they had a mortgage, they bought a house, and they have a mortgage. If they met the eligibility requirements of low or moderate, they would be eligible, correct?
Well, I think it's important to point out that this isn't a program. Like, this is intended to give us the ability to put in place programs, any program that we put in place following this, let's say it's something to help homeowners pay for their mortgage if they're, you know, fall within that threshold, that would have its own criteria.
But what happens to the people who don't fall into this? And there, so the example, if you let me give you the numbers to help you to sort of illustrate the point. So if you were to buy a single person $200,000 home, with all the utility parts included, we could back out some of that now because if we're saying it's not internet, phone, and cable, but that's a small amount number. But the rough number is $117,000 would have to be your annual income to be 30%. At $117,000, you are not meeting the eligibility. You're not going to be lower moderate income. Even at $58,600, you would not meet, I don't believe, you would meet the low to moderate income threshold. But that would mean that your gross income for housing costs would be 50%, but you wouldn't be eligible for any potential programs because in the affordable housing definition, you're saying that they have to be eligible for lower moderate income.
Well, no. I'm a little confused by the question. I might not be understanding it correctly. If you're paying 50% of your income for your mortgage, then you are in an unaffordable situation.
It's not the mortgage.
And this legislation would be intended to help you.
No, not the mortgage only. It would include all of the, as the wording here says,
sure, your costs, your housing costs.
Yeah,
if you're, okay, so go on.
So I'm just saying that a person who, so at $58,000, I didn't do the calculation because we only just sort of got to there a few minutes ago. At $58,000, you're still talking about even $150,000 house to get to 30.
Yeah.
To be at 30%, and you still wouldn't qualify for any potential program. I guess I just don't know why.
Because you make too much money is what you're saying?
Well, based on this definition, yes. That's why I'm sort of asking. Why define eligibility if there is no program in place? Why put eligibility into the equation in the law?
Yeah, this was honestly the first draft of this didn't have the eligibility. It was under the advice of Director Doyle and counsel to include it, to be totally blunt.
Because I mean, and counsel, correct me wrong, but it would seem to me that if we put it in the law, that would then that would then dictate what any programs would be. They would have to fall within the law.
Sure. Yeah, please.
I will point out that a significant population in Ulster County is outside of that eligibility criteria. This would be a major, major step forward. And if we feel that we've helped all of those people and we want to expand the criteria because we have already helped them, we can amend the law. But we are going to be a long way from being there.
Yeah, please.
No, I guess I was just going to circle back to kind of like a big picture, Councilor Ragucci.
Yep.
Should I dial it in?
Sure.
Council. Yeah, we're actually just debating the definition of affordable housing. I don't know if are you able to be here or should we continue on? Yeah, I'll tell you what, let me give you a call right back. Okay, all right, thanks. It's about 15 minutes out. So, the if I understand it, the purpose of this legislation is really not to define specific affordable housing programs. It's to take this out of the gift clause of the Constitution and to say this is a public purpose. So Ulster County can now spend public funds on what would otherwise be private housing, private benefit.
Correct. And there's a comptroller's opinion that we're drawing on that rests in the New York municipal law around the police power for the justification for associating affordable housing as a county purpose. And this is their recommendation. It's been implemented in Tompkins County, and it's paved the way for just the sort of programs that are going to come with their own definitions that I'm eager for the legislature to be able to entertain in the months ahead.
So I guess the drafting question is, and I don't want to disagree with Director Doyle, he may have very good reasons for having included this, but if all you're trying to do is broadly take this out of the gift clause, why do you have a definition in this law at all?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a question for Director Doyle. I mean, we're really working, you know, we're paving the way for programs here that, you know, have yet to be introduced and are going to receive just the sort of scrutiny that we're providing here. So, I mean, there will be ample opportunity to debate the expansiveness or exclusiveness of the affordability definitions. And this is intended, to your point, this is intended to pave the way for that, for that further discussion in as expansive a way as possible. I wish that Director Doyle could be there. I also wish that these questions had come up when we were, had initially introduced this. But I totally understand that they merit questioning. But I would just, encourage the committee to consider that there will be ample opportunity for every single policy that this paves the way for to provide exactly the type of scrutiny that we're talking about here. And I don't feel that delaying this would do anything to help further the issues that we're talking about here. So I would really encourage you to move forward with this tonight. And I hope that you will consider that.
While we have the sponsor on the phone, does anyone have any additional?
Can I ask a few?
Yep. Can you hear Legislator Roberts?
I can, yes.
Thank you, Abe. I want to commend you on putting this together. It seems you and Legislator Erner, this is a very large undertaking, and I get your passion for it, but I'm concerned about what the future looks like, and you said issues that may come up in the future. How do you see the future going forward and any programs that this may allow to move?
Yeah, I'll give you a very concrete example that I hope will be up for discussion soon, and that's the creation of a housing trust. That would be able to contract with agencies and provide, to provide housing programs that might help people with their rent, it might help people with their mortgages, it might help towns with their, water and sewer. There are things that we did with ARPA because of the rules with ARPA that we, can't do today, but we would be able to do if we had a housing trust, things that we right now have to go, through a housing development corporation for, such as the investment that's being made at Golden Hill, we would be able to do with a housing trust and have more oversight and more transparency and have more, a broader array of programs. I mean, a housing trust would be able to implement all sorts of programs that would assist in the housing crisis, and right now the county's hands are somewhat tied in being able to administer those programs. So I'm hoping the main impetus for this from my perspective was when I started asking questions about what it would take for us to do a housing trust.
Can you, is a housing trust a slush fund, so to speak, or is it a board of directors?
It's a board of directors. Yeah, I mean, it would have a review. I mean, it depends on what ultimately gets proposed. And I don't want to I don't want to, you know, put words in anyone's mouth from the executive branch of government, but I'm optimistic that we'll be able to come up with something that provides oversight, because frankly, that's one of the things that I'm uncomfortable with on the Housing Development Corporation, where we have a couple of members on there from the legislature and then other members that we've appointed from the public, but I wouldn't call it a robust governance structure. And the governance is incredibly important, and that's part of why I want to move away from this Housing Development Corporation and move towards a formal housing trust that actually has housing experts and representatives from the community that are providing that oversight as formal appointees to the oversight committee.
And how would you fund this housing trust?
I would imagine the first investment in the housing trust would be made from the excess fund balance money.
Any number on that, Abe?
Well, I know that the county executive asked for $15 million to be dedicated to affordable housing in her state of the county address. I suspect their proposal would look a lot like that.
Okay. And again, these are all things that would be determined in a whole another legislative process.
So you said Tompkins? You said Tompkins County. Tompkins County, you said, was there another one? I thought there was another one mentioned at one point.
Yeah, there's another county that we talk about a lot, which is Westchester County. Westchester County is a little bit weird because all of their affordable housing, they also have established housing as a county purpose or as a public purpose at the county level. But the reason that they had to do that was because of a number of lawsuits around fair housing practices. And so their model for housing trust and for housing as a county purpose has some really good policies in it, but the genesis is a little bit different than the situation that we're in, even if the mechanisms are the same.
Yeah, so Tompkins, when was that established? When did they pass that law? Do you know?
Tompkins, I don't know off the top of my head, but it's been for a number of years.
Okay, so it's not recent.
No, it's not recent, and they actually have done a lot. They've made a lot of progress with their work, for the programs that they've been able to, to actually put shovels in the ground.
No, the reason I was asking is because if this is something that's more recent and the lawsuits haven't come yet, I just wondered how this would work long term.
No, it's not. It's not like that at all. Yeah, yeah. This has been for a while in Tompkins County.
Does anyone else have any additional questions for the sponsor while we have them on the whatever you call that thing?
Phone.
Telephone.
Yes, it's called telephone dial.
Looks like a drone.
No, I think this is the first time I've ever seen it used in the committee. Anyone else? All right, thank you, Legislator. You should tell us.
I appreciate it. And did I overhear that Councilor Ragucci is coming in for this conversation potentially?
I just spoke with him. He's en route from Rosendale.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to jump back on the call for that conversation as well. I'm eager to see this move forward, and I really appreciate the committee, seriously considering moving forward with this tonight, because I really think that this is the first step, but it's the first step of many, and I would caution against any delay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Does anyone anyone have any additional questions they would like to clarify with Councilor Ragucci? Because we do have the option that we can come back to this when Councilor Ragucci is present. Otherwise, we can move forward.
Any reason why we should wait for him?
He did ask that the committee not adjourn if possible, if there were questions.
That's what I'm asking, if there are additional questions.
So if there were not questions, then obviously it's
very good. Because I would like to see this, take a vote on this.
But, if you want to circle back after the other business, you should be here in 10 minutes or less.
Are you good?
We can always bring it up for
reconsideration. So with that, see no one else, I'll call a vote. All those in favor?
I will just say I'm going to vote aye tonight because I know otherwise we'll have petition discharge, so just I know it's going to make it to the floor anyway, so I'll vote for tonight.
Aye. Those opposed? No, advances 3-1.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair?
Yep.
The members of the Human Rights Commission are here. I just wanted to make sure that they got here, and I'm leaving. Goodbye.
All right, thank you. All right. Moving. Yeah, I just wanted to. Now, can I get a motion for discussion on Resolution 128?
I'll move it.
A second?
Second.
So, actually, I'll kick off the discussion on this. You all should have in your materials our friends at the County Assessors Association, which, upon working on this law, I learned that we have a County Assessors Association. The head of that association is the assessor from the city of Kingston, Mr. Daniel Baker. I've had some conversations with him a while back. I know my co-sponsor, Legislative Roberts, as well as council, has been in receipt. I'm not sure if all members of the committee received this, but I believe I tried to include them when I responded. But so they had three recommendations that you can see. It's double-sided, the email. Based on their discussions, I think, and having conversations with folks that suggestions one and two make sense to myself. I don't think suggestion number three is necessary for us to make a statement in reference to the New York State tax law. I do believe that, you know, it would be appropriate if this does pass the full legislature for myself as a sponsor and Legislator Roberts to, you know, reach out to Everett from Emergency Services and say, you know, at our request, would you please make sure you do reference the state law, but they'll be very aware of it. Essentially that they, you know, volunteers can't do both. Does anyone have any questions about any of one or two, or even three, if you disagree with that assessment from my assessment of the assessors?
I don't see a reason why we couldn't include it, but I think the town of Plattekill had a public hearing on their version of the law, which they took from us, but they had issues with a couple of volunteer firemen getting their assessment. I guess Walk Hill School District passed it this year, so it took effect immediately. Unlike ours, we couldn't get it done with the meetings.
Yeah.
And committee
Unless council, we could literally just add a whereas noted, literally saying New York State tax law section 606E2 does not allow for, whereas that section does not allow for volunteer firefighters and ambulance workers to receive both the exemption and the credit for the same fiscal period. Could we just add a whereas that literally says that?
Well, I mean, this is a local law authorizing local enactment of tax exemption, and my only concern is when you authorize these, you parrot the state legislation that.
So that is not it'd be.
Enables it, and that's not in the state law. It's in another section of state law.
So it'd be cleaner actually not to.
I think it would be cleaner not to, but I'm not. If it doesn't invalidate it, and you know, the assessors feel really strongly about it. You know, we could inquire with State Tax Department Council and say, hey, look, you know, like they, for example, they were very helpful when we enacted the suspension on the gasoline sales tax. You had to follow their form to a T if you wanted it done. Like, you couldn't doctor it up to suit your own, you know, needs, right? So my guess is it's a very similar pathway with something like this. So if our assessors feel really strongly about it and, you know, we want to include that in our law, just make a call to the council at the State Department of Taxation and Finance. This is what we're looking to do. Do you have any objections with us including this in our law? Is it going to invalidate the law if we do? You can get that guidance. I know Vicki has a hotline.
Mm-hmm. But that wouldn't require us including it in the actual language.
I don't believe it's required. Yep. It's not in the state law. Yep. This is a suggestion from the assessor.
Yeah.
I think they're just trying to be constructive.
Yeah, yeah.
Like from a practical point of view, saying, hey, we're the guys that have to implement this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're getting these applications, and folks don't necessarily understand, although it is clearly in the instructions if you download the state form, that you can't take both the credit and the exemption.
Yeah.
The whole idea of the fiscal period is not clear. Like, that's not stated in the instructions. So, you know, they're trying to be helpful. You know, if you don't want to put it directly in the law, something like a handbill that goes out from our director might be.
Yeah, I think it's better for us to work.
The application does say that, Nick, if I'm right, that you can't take both.
Yeah.
Correct.
None of the firemen or volunteers are going to read the local law.
Yeah, so I think
right,
that's...
The application definitely says that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And
I can make sure the assessors are aware of that. Do you want to just actually, Councilor Peskin, so what were your thoughts on suggestion number one?
I want to just look at the actual law, but I would defer to each individual department as to how they define enrolled member, because they're all going to be a little different, and I think they have to certify. I think that's how we have this written.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll send their list up to the county. They're the ones that are certifying.
So does that mean we have to change any language?
I don't believe we have to change anything if that's...
it's already...
I'll take a look at it, but I think if we leave it on the locality to certify, then there's nothing for us to change. Right, like, we're not going to define what, you know...
Yeah, well, that makes sense to me. If they have to certify, then
yeah,
they're already doing it.
You know, Woodstock may define it one way, right?
I'm sure there's different definitions.
Kingston might define it another way, Marlboro another way, so...
I'm sure the way Woodstock defines it is superior, but I'm sure there's a difference.
Could be, so, yeah. So with the qualifications, I just want
to
make sure there's no changes required. I think that we should leave it as... Because
the
suggestion is an either-or.
Uh-huh.
I think as it's written now, we pass it on to the locality. If that's the case, we don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm. And then on recommendation two, the language regarding that the March 1st date, which makes sense.
Well, so I'm not sure. I think it makes March 1st is the taxable status date, so you've got to have your application in before that date to get that treatment for the following tax year.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's asking, Mr. Baker, if I understand his email correctly, is we're sending, our localities are sending the list of enrolled members up to emergency management. And what he's saying is, hey, we want that list, too, to process the exemptions. I think that's sensible. I mean, that presumes that an exemption application's been filed. Like, they're not just going to blanket, right, grant exemptions based on a list. I assume they're just using that to cross-check the application.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's sensible. I think it's a pragmatic suggestion.
Is there a basic language we can add to?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But I'm given a second. I can work up something for one and two.
Yep.
Let's take a look.
Do we want to come back to it? Give him a moment to just draft that and then come back to this? Yeah, I don't know why I'm looking
at
you.
Right. I don't know why you're looking at me.
But Legislator Gravois says, was that good with you, Legislator Gravois?
I have no objection to that, yeah.
All right, can we just move on to
215?
Yeah, so we did 184 and 212. Can I get a motion for discussion on 215?
I'll move it.
Any discussion?
How's the county executive feel about this?
I have not received any input from the county executive. And we had all three deputy executives at caucus, and I don't believe any of them spoke on it. Rather than us setting the public hearing. So, definitely none of them spoke on this.
Does this have to go to referendum?
Yes, because it would be amending the charter.
Okay.
If it got passed after the public hearing.
No, I'm probably against it, but in order to speed the process up, I'll vote yes for the public hearing.
Yeah. Anyone else? Seeing none, all those in favor? Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Passes 4-0. Councilor Iguchi, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Councilor Iguchi, Councilor Pascal is just working on the suggestion language. We got some suggestions from our friends at the Assessors Association, and he's just working just some clarifying language to make sure we take their suggestions to heart. you do believe we need time, we could meet briefly, right, before session, technically? What are our options?
Legislator Gavaris's meeting is expected to take some time.
That's true, they do have a tendency.
We're meeting early already.
Yeah. Because I don't believe the amendments will be controversial. So would it be the will of the committee to be easier just to give council a little bit of time to...
And we could take literally 2 minutes on Tuesday night if we had to.
Would we have to do if we do them Tuesday night, though, would we have to do them on the floor again? That's the only annoying part, or frustrating part.
You just make your amendments. We'll sleep on the other side.
Do we need the actual final language? I mean, we know what the language, the amendments are going to do,
but. If we do them Tuesday night and have a brief laws and rules, then we don't have to do them on the floor.
No, we do have to do them on the floor.
If you do it Tuesday.
Because it's the night of.
I think the clerk would accept you making an amendment
to
reflect that language in the law, adopt consider that amendment, discuss that amendment, adopt the resolution with the local law as amended, and council can get us...
And if there's any huge uproar from you, Legislator Levine, or you, Legislator Roberts, or myself, we'll then we can propose an amendment to strike it on the floor.
I have confidence that council will get it right.
So I'll make a motion to do just that.
Seemed reasonable.
All those in favor on the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
All those in favor on the resolution as amended?
Aye.
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 One recusal, Legislator Gavaris for the purpose of employment. And then, let's see, moving on. Do we have to change the start time on 2:15?
I let it go.
Okay, thank you. There's forthcoming stuff. Besides that, any new or old business? Anyone would like to discuss related to our committee? Looks like our friends from the Human Rights Commission left. They didn't have anything on the agenda. They didn't reach out prior, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think
so. The charter revision was needed.
Oh, that's why. Yeah, yeah. All right. Anyone? So no new old.
I'll make a motion to adjourn, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Second. And all those in favor of adjournment? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Thank you all for your diligence and dedication.